Sorensen, Sights, Sargent, Sarah again, Norwich in the top six. All in all, a good week, I think. How are those nerves heading into the final nine games of the Championship season? Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Coleman's of Norwich, producers of the very best mustard in the land. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by Samuel Seaman, Paddy Davitt and Adam Harvey in the wake of Norwich City's 5-0 victory over Rotherham. I think if we'd have got 11 together, we might have given them a good game, though, to be fair. And we'll delve into all of that in just a moment. But Paddy, I think last week we said 6 points from these three games would constitute a good week for Norwich City. That's what they've got. They end it in the top six on goal difference. So, yeah, a good week.
In the end, yeah, an eventful week as well, given the events at Middlesbrough. I'm sure we'll get into that in due course, as they clearly had an impact today in the form of a certain Borja Sainz. But when the dust settles to go into the new week in the top six, and as David said after the game, you know, I'd rather be there at the end than nine games to go. But, you know, tongue firmly in cheek there. To at this stage of the season, six consecutive home league wins at Carr Road. Whatever they aren't doing on the road, they're very much doing at home. And that is underpinning, as I say, a seam of form and an accumulation of points, which is, as we stand, puts them above the waterline. And clubs like Coventry and Hull now and Preston are having to play catch-up. And I think you'd rather be in Norwich's position from here. And the way it's going to open up now over the next 7 days, real opportunity to cement their place in the top six going into the international break, and then let the others below them then have 2 weeks to sort of sit and stew about it. And the manner of how they did it against a very diabolically poor Rotherham team, let's be honest, poorest I've seen in the league at Carr Road this season, that's for sure. But nevertheless, as David said again after the game, these type of fixtures you can just take for granted, but you still have to go out and put the elements in terms of quality, but also mindset and the character to make it as one-sided as we all felt it probably would be. And boy, did they do that today. So, I think on balance, a little bit of a rocky period on Teesside, but on balance, that constitutes a very good week for Norwich.
And how are you? I think people picked up your... you came down with a little bit of a cold.
Yeah. I've got my sense of humour back now anyway. That's the main thing. Yeah, no, I definitely had a sense of humour failure last week. But induced, I hasten to add, by... Whatever had hit me as the second half elapsed against Cardiff, was it? Yeah. So, you know...
Sunderland,
yeah. So maybe I'm not fully out of the woods then. But I'm fighting fit now. So thanks for any concern. I doubt there was any concern. But if there was, I am fit for duty and looking forward to the remainder of the season now. So, we're just mindful that thing doesn't fall on your head again today, Connor, like it did last week.
I've moved it behind you this week, so if it falls, then...
I hadn't noticed that. Okay, fair enough. That'll mean nothing, absolutely nothing for our audio listeners, You're very welcome. But for anybody watching this half-assed attempt to put a podcast together, then they'll know that last week it didn't quite go to plan for many reasons.
No, it was a bit chaotic, and it was a picture of Grant Holt that fell on my head, which is good, and it's a picture of him celebrating. So there's something, and he was actually in the side that last the last Norwich City side to win six times at Carrow Road in a row, and that was in January 2010, back in League One. So that tells you quite how difficult it's been to replicate that, even in a couple of title-winning campaigns and a few promotion-winning campaigns. It is remarkable what they've done since the start of 2024 at home. Sam, I'll ask you the question. How are you? You've got a hat on, so people won't be able to see, but you've gone a bit Jamie Cureton, which is a 90s reference, but instead of green, you've gone very Coventry blue with your hair.
It's because you said Coventry blue. Do you know the number of times this afternoon people have made Ipswich references to me? There was one guy sat in front of us that always sits in front of the press box that called me a scummer as soon as he saw me. I hope in jest, but I've promised I'll change it before the Derby, because I don't really want to be set upon by anyone that thinks I'm in areas that I shouldn't be. But I don't know. Worth trying something different, isn't it? We'll all lose our hair one day, so, you know, make the most while you've got it.
Yeah, I think if I had blue hat, I'd be wearing a hat as well, Mark. So there we go. Adam, how are things? I've done the other two. I haven't got anything really to go at you with. So how are you doing? You all well?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, particularly after the events that unfolded this afternoon and recovered from Wednesday night and me and Sam's interesting trip to the away end. Which
Hang on. Yes, I have got something to go with you with. What's this? Right, you're in the away end. Me and Paddy are working hard in the press box. You guys, as we set out on the accreditation front, all of a sudden, what pops up on our social media feeds, but a picture with, and it's very relevant today, Jordan Hugill. I mean, if anyone's seen Ian Abrahams on TalkSport, referred to as Moose, he's prone to a picture with the players. I mean, what on earth has gone on there?
I will say Jordan Hugo wanted a photo with me and Sam more than the other way around. That is what happened. I mean, Sam was doing some fan videos pre-match, and a couple of well-known Norwich fans, Killian O'Grady, who of course fan of the season last year, and Nick, if they're watching. I was speaking to Sam and they said, oh, you know, about Jordan Hugill. Picked up on the fact he was in the away end. We went over to him to see if he wanted to come on camera. Wasn't willing to go on camera, but he said, you know, I'll have a photo of you guys. And we're like, well, we'll take you up on the opportunity and put it out there. And I think a few, seemingly Middlesbrough fans didn't seem too impressed by the fact he was in the away end. I think given his ties to Borough and being a season ticket holder when he was a youth back in the day. So, all in all, good experience, and good to see Jordan Hugill, of course, got on the pitch today. It was good. Obviously, me and Sam got to test the cuisine of the away end as well, which was, put it this way, I'll be glad to be back in the press areas for the food that's on offer rather than the away end. So,
what did you end up having?
Well, we had a burger because the pies were.
It
wasn't for my taste, to be honest. It was, there was a load of pies on offer. It was, Minson's didn't sound too great, to be honest. A vegan one and a chicken bolty, so you'd have been right up for that, Connor. So I went for the burger. It was the most dry thing I think I've ever eaten in my life, and probably summed up the whole evening. Left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, much like it did for Borja Sainz.
You know what you needed on that burger? A bit of Coleman's mustard. That would have sorted you right out. Always on brand. And to be fair to Jordan Hugill, after the week that Rotherham have had, it might have been the highlight of his week getting to watch Norwich at Middlesbrough. I don't know.
Have a photo with us.
Yeah. It's the closest he got to anyone in a yellow and green shirt in the last few days. That's for sure. Paddy, let's get back to what happened today. And like you said, it was. And all of the conversations that we're going to have around this game probably will be caveated on the fact it was against a side that is so far off it. I don't want to be particularly harsh to Rotherham. I doubt it. If there are any Rotherham fans watching this, go and have a nice weekend. You don't need to be watching this after, you know, watching your team ship 10 goals. And fair hats off to all of those Rotherham fans who made the trip, by the way, because they haven't won an away game since, I think, November 2022. It's 16 months. They've taken 4 points on the road all season. It was probably a fixture that came at the right time for Norwich after what happened on Wednesday. I think that's probably fair to say. But some of the quality that they showed, particularly in those goals, and we'll come on to Borja Sainz, but his one, Gabriel Sarr's one as well. Like you said, you still have to beat what's in front of you, and they did that pretty emphatically today.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is we've seen this against teams who, for some unknown reason, come to Carr Road and essentially play into Norwich's hands. And by that, I mean very passive. Defensively, the structure isn't great. There's a lack of intensity. There's no real aggressiveness to their press, if there is a press at all. And when you have a Sarr or a Nunes, McLean with his passing range, Sainz as well, those type of players at this level against a team who is essentially going to allow them to do what they want to do and give them the time and the space to do it, it's only going to end one way and not very well for the opposition. And Rotherham were probably the most marked degree of that. But we have seen that on occasion. There's teams who've come to Carr Road. I mean, Cardiff got put away, didn't they, recently? And I'm sure we can stop and think, and there's a few more fall into that category. But this was the most graphic example of a team who could not have set up and approached it any better from a David Wagner and his coaching staff perspective. And, OK, the circumstances were favourable, but Norwich were ruthless and they did show that quality individually and collectively and took the invitation and ruthlessly punished Rotherham to be 4-0 up at half-time. So I don't care who you're playing in the Championship. That is pretty emphatic. And, You know, mixed in with that though was some, you know, while we've talked obviously now liberally about the mitigation that it was a very, very poor Rotherham team, there was absolutely nothing poor or lacking in quality about Zara's goal or about Science's goal or, you know, the clinical edge to how they countered for some of those other goals. So, yeah, it's a bit of a confliction because, you know, anybody who was there will know Rotherham were bad, very bad. But Norwich, for me, the most impressive aspect of it today was off the back of Middlesbrough and the way they capitulated, let's be honest, there when Science got sent off, because you can't put at his door the way they didn't defend for goals 2 and 3 that Borough scored. Very almost, you know, the hands went up and they started to feel sorry for themselves. That's what it felt like watching that performance from the moment that Science got sent off. So, in very short order, to turn it around to what they produced today, that is a testament to those players and Wagner and their powers of recovery. And then you zoom out and in the wider context of where they were, you know, on the fringes of the top six, it was a massive statement of intent. Biggest win of Wagner's Norwich career as well, lest we not forget.
Yes, indeed. And I think, you know, Sam, as much as the goals were impressive, I'm just checking now, but they limited Rotherham to very little. I mean, wasn't a shot on target. It was they had two shots in total, one of which I think was a Hugo header that was flicked. I can't even think of the other one. That control that they had of the game, because we've seen teams who are under par who have come to Carrow Road, and Norwich perhaps haven't shown that ruthless edge. And it helps when, you know, Rotherham are giving you goals like they did the first two, where Gabriel Sarr, a player of his quality and stature and ability, and you leave him basically in a 10-yard pocket in your own 6-yard box. I mean, that is as bad as it comes. And then a set piece goal where Sorensen just has to walk off his marker. So there was quality. There was a fair bit of really poor defending in there as well. But that control, that dominance that Norwich exuded throughout the whole game, even at the point where probably they declared, and it was then about, you know, preservation of key players, making sure Kenny McLean didn't get suspended. Even that aspect, that even when they made the subs, there was still real control in their play with the possession and the way that game unfolded.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to highlight that Norwich haven't always navigated these games as easily as they did this afternoon. I know it sounds like cliche when Wagner talks pre-match about the fact that, you know, that Rotherham is maybe a more difficult task than a lot of people might think. But I actually think when you look at how they've done at other times in this scenario, that shows you that it's not quite as easy as maybe it appears. You know, you don't have to cast your minds that far back or in especially different circumstances to when Norwich drew 0-0 with Rotherham when they were pushing for the playoffs this time last year. So, yeah, to be able to have that much control and to dominate the game as much as they did maybe was expected, but it wasn't you know, a gimme by any measure, really. So yeah, I think the fact that they got that goal early did allow them to dominate to an extent, because Rotherham then had to, I mean, it wasn't a very successful plan, but they had to almost formulate a plan to try and get back into the game, and that helped Norwich control the game a lot. But even when they were struggling to provide the same attacking threat that they had in the first half, in the second half it was just basically a game of keep ball. Rotherham couldn't really get close to them, and what that says about the quality of Rotherham we've already sort of discussed. But I think there have been a few times this season, and especially in the last few months, that we've seen Norwich actually dominate possession. We've seen them be much, much more proactive in this positive run, and I think that's only good news for the fans, because that's A, what they want to watch entertainment wise, and B, it's delivering results, and long may that continue, because I think it's a fantastic mix for those fans at Carrow Road.
And just on the home record, Adam, like we say, it's the first time since January 2010 they've been able to go on a run like this. But actually, you think about their Carrow Road form more broadly, probably since fans returned after the pandemic up to probably the start of this year, has been pretty woeful. It wasn't great to watch football at Carrow Road. Last year, they were probably better on the road than they were at home. And this, you know, only recently have they turned that home form around. And especially considering where they were in November after Blackburn, where they were well documented where they were, but they'd lost to Leeds in that run, they'd lost to Blackburn, their home form wasn't particularly great. the transformation, but also the transformation, I think, in energy and in feeling around it now. There feels like a real confidence on the pitch now about when they play at home. And I spoke to Jakob Sørensen after the game, and he basically said that there is a feeling now that I don't want to say invincibility, but that there is almost a feeling now of real confidence that they can, whoever turns up at Carroll Road, that they can beat. And I don't want to look too far ahead into the future, but if you do begin to turn your mind at some point in the next 9 games to a playoff battle, particularly given that the likelihood, well, the reality is the game that they're going to play first will be at home, if they can get in there, I'm saying can and could a lot, that feels like something that's going to be really important if they can continue to build that over the course of the rest of the season. I mean, I look at the home games, and I mean, barring that Ipswich one, it's quite favourable, isn't it, the home form at Carroll Road, albeit, again, we know how the Championship can work.
Yeah, it kind of has that fortress feeling around it. Last season, you know, you sort of went to Carroll Road almost dreading what you were about to go and watch, and there wasn't really that kind of enjoyment, and you kind of felt that really around the place. It was a pretty, you know, apathetic, dire place to be in, and fans didn't really want to be there, and the players weren't enjoying the sort of, you know, the feeling around it, and obviously the performances weren't good either. Where you contrast that to today, and the sun shining, the fans are in good voice, the players are enjoying themselves on the pitch as well, and you can see that by kind of the faces. You know, I sort of looked through some of the photos that our photographer Paul had taken, and you kind of see the smiles on the face of the players, and that kind of energy, and yeah, it's just a much better place to be. And as you mentioned, you look at now kind of the last 4 home games, and Ipswich is the one that maybe sticks out as the more difficult test. But I kind of said it during the week, I actually think there shouldn't be any fear going into that game. Norwich are on their own patch, you know, and as we kind of referenced, they pretty much dispatched everyone since November and that Blackburn game with relative ease. You know, obviously there's been, you know, sort of moments in games where they've had to ride it out, but on the whole, yeah, it's been impressive, and long may it continue. You know, obviously it is now kind of trying to turn that away form in these final 5 trips on the road, because, you know, that could play key into where they finish, whether that is in the top 6 or just outside, of course starting with Stoke next week. But yeah, certainly from the home perspective, I don't see any issues really in any of those games. Yeah, I think they can ride it out and get, you know, almost maximum points probably.
And this is the reality, Paddy, of their home record in 2024. Played 7, won 6, drawn 1. This is obviously discounting the FA Cup game. Lost their unbeaten goals for 19, goals against 5, points 19. And no Championship team has picked up more points at home since the turn of the year. It's a remarkable turnaround, considering, as I said, the difficulties that they've had at Carroll Road, not just in recent months before this run, but actually in recent years. And for those fans, actually, who probably haven't seen winning form like this, well, since January 2010, but even, you know, that second title winning season in the Championship, they didn't get to watch a lot of that. It's been a while since we've had consistently good, entertaining, attractive football at Carroll Road.
Yeah, and obviously this, everything feels positive at the moment, so we don't really need to take this in a negative direction. But a lot of the talk when it has been feeling like it is bad and things are drifting has been that, it's a word which, you know, some would blanch at, but that disconnect kind of thing. And partly, whether you believe that there has been a disconnect or not, but partly, I'm sure, the people who do feel, it would have been that factor. It would have been that paying lots of money, season ticket holders, to not get a lot in return in terms of either entertainment or a team on the pitch playing a brand of football that is good enough to A, entertain, and B, win games consistently. And, you know, you can debate wherever you are on either side of that, but that was undeniable, really, if you go past this period now to, you know, the start of this season. Certainly the end of last season, am I right in saying they did lose 5 on the bounce at Carroll Road?
Didn't score a goal after February, did they?
In the back end of Carroll Road. So you had that, you had obviously that season itself coming off the back of another Premier League season of real abject kind of uncompetitiveness. So, and then to take the point you made there, Connor, the season before, which was the second title winning season, the pandemic season, fans primarily not in the stadium. So, and then go one further back, and that was the first Premier League season where, again, it, you know, started well but tailed off alarmingly. So it has been, over a consistent amount of seasons, for various reasons, at Carroll Road, quite a grind, and that's why those figures you quote there in terms of this last 7 league games, and the only game they dropped points was actually the Southampton draw, when, as we know, they were, you know, clinging on for dear life in terms of the lack of possession or territorial control and reliant on Josh Sargent to get him a point that day against the Southampton team, who were absolutely flying at that point under Russell Martin. It is. It's remarkable, really, that we're now, after today, looking back at six straight league wins and a draw, when the last two seasons, maybe even longer than that, have been the opposite. And, you know, the only puzzle now is, well, why can they produce that at home and then we have what we have away from home, which is so far the other end of the spectrum. It needs some sort of PhD thesis, because it's the same players, it's the same head coach. When he's been asked about this home and away divergence, he says the approach isn't any different. He wants them to do the same things away from home that they do at home in the recent games, but for whatever reason, each game is obviously different in its own merits. You get incidences like happen with science, and these things are uncontrollable events. But overall, the contrast is alarming, really, and pertinent now as we roll on to Stoke away this coming Saturday, the next game. They need to find something, and they need to find it quickly, because it's not going to be enough, I don't think, purely to rely on this, as good as it is, home form and winning results. If they can't go away from home and do the same thing, they're going to have to pick up a win or two, I think, away from home between now and the end of the season, if they are going to do what we all hope they will and finish in the top six.
I do think, to be fair, I would say in that first half an hour at Middlesbrough before that science red card, I think they were getting towards the sort of performance we want to see from them away from home. I think when you spoke to McLean, he basically said that was what they were trying to achieve as well. And I think they actually did that to a certain extent. Then you take into account the fact that the FA have now ruled that red card was wrongful. And I suppose that, not to linger too much on Middlesbrough, but that probably adds to the sense of frustration, because not only was that a valuable 3 points, but that was also a win that I think would have really given them confidence going into the away games. So in that sense, you probably have to give them credit for starting to turn that around a little bit for the first half an hour of that game. But obviously, they haven't managed to get the win out of it. So results-wise, it still looks pretty poor. But if they can replicate that first half an hour at Middlesbrough at Stoke, then they're probably on the way to a winner there.
Yeah, and I think in many ways, because of the circumstances at Middlesbrough, I think you almost have to I know it's part of that away picture, but I think you do have to accept there's a lot of mitigation around that, albeit, you know, as you rightly said earlier, Paddy, it wasn't 10 men that made Ben Gibson go charging out of position and left Latte Laff there, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't 10 men that meant Jack Stacey was backpedalling majorly for a cross. So that is, I guess, part of it, but some of the defending on that was woeful. And we will come back to the red card and have a bit of a chat in a little bit more detail about that, if you can spare any more chatter about it. But Sam, it was my last name begins with S. Yours does as well. We're in fashion. That's a good day to have a last name beginning with S today.
It's a great start. I think, especially given the potential there was for more goals from that era as well. Jack Stacey didn't manage to get on the...
he's let himself down, hasn't he, really?
Yeah, that's pretty
poor. Got an assist, though.
Only the two assists on the afternoon. So, yeah, you have to... But I have to say, I've done well there to get that much analysis out of that. But it's a good start, and it was interesting to think about. Excellent for us.
I mean, hypothetically, if Sydney Van Hooijdonk or Sam McCallum would have scored, would we have counted that? I don't think we could have done, could we? So there we go. Yeah, I mean, as we said, just to round off the debate on Rotherham, really, the ruthlessness of it and the authority of it, that probably seeps into a little bit of the home record that we spoke about. And, you know, again, we can open the can of worms about why they're a top six side away and a bottom six at home and a bottom six side away. But you're beginning to feel that now. You go back to the Cardiff win, and Watford was messy, but there were elements of that game, I think, where you could see this kind of surging confidence through them. And I think what's interesting now, not necessarily today as an example, but I think last week against Sunderland was, and who did I speak to after Sunderland? There was one player, I can't remember who it was now, but they spoke about it as well, in terms of what we're seeing now is teams setting up differently at Carrow Road, because they know a lot of the threats and a lot of the, I guess, the attacking elements that Norwich have now, because we've seen it in recent weeks. They can score from set pieces, they can score from range, they can score from crosses, they can cut you open in possession. They can score from corners, etc. Feels increasingly like there are more threats now that teams have to deal with when it comes to this Norwich City team, as opposed to maybe they did a few weeks or months ago.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that was something I found myself considering halfway through the first half, was actually, I thought at one point, oh, they're getting all their joy from crosses. Obviously, that was where the opener came from. Jack Stacey then got another assist for Josh Sargent for the fourth goal. But then actually, when you think about it, they also had plenty of danger coming from sort of the likes of Gabriel Sara, Marcelino Nunez through the middle. They had Borja Sainz, obviously, running straight through the middle of the pitch and scoring that fantastic goal. So, yeah, as you say, really a lot of options for them to create from. And you compare that to where we were 3-4 months ago. I remember us sitting talking about the Millwall game and saying they literally had one plan, which was to hit diagonals to the fullbacks. And when that didn't work, they didn't really have any sort of solution. And now you look at it and, yeah, as you said, crosses, set pieces, individual goals, passing moves that slice through teams through the middle of the pitch. They've got most of the avenues that any team scores goals from, really. And I think that's testament both to David Wagner and the way that he's opened up the possibilities in how they attack, but also to the excellent quality they have in that squad and the diversity of quality they have in that squad, because they've got excellent crossers. You look at that team today, they had McCallum and Stacey in the fullback positions, and both of those are very good crossers of the ball. And they've got players that can thread balls through. I'm, you know, thinking of Kenny McLean and Marcelino Nunez, Gabriel Sara. They've got excellent dribblers. And yeah, it feels like actually when you put things together, they have a lot of elements. And there have been times this season when I've thought maybe people have exaggerated the extent to which this is a squad that should be pushing for higher up than where they were. And a lot of the time it was a stick used to beat David Wagner with, in terms of the fact that he should have been achieving more. And I'm not sure I necessarily always agreed with that, but actually today I found myself thinking, and probably the fact that they were playing against Rotherham contributed to this, but I found myself thinking more often than I have previously, actually this is a really, really good squad of players that have a lot of things to offer. And yeah, as you said, they're showing that in a lot of different ways at the moment.
But the one thing for me, Adam, is it makes it so difficult for opposition teams coming to Carrow Road, because you can try and sit in a low, compact block, in which case Norwich will go, OK, then we'll work the ball wide and we'll put crosses in all day and see how you cope with that. And if you do stand up to that, well, hey, we've got Gabriel Sara, we've got Marcelino Nunez from distance. If you want to come and press us, well, then we'll bait that press, we'll play out and we'll try and get you transitionally, as they did with Sargent's goal today. And they're not afraid to go direct as well. And you know, if failing all of that, then they'll try and win a free kick, and you've got Gabriel Sara and Marcelino Nunez to stand over that with quality. There's now probably more, as Sam said, lots more avenues for them to hurt teams and methods to scoring goals maybe than there were a few weeks ago. And obviously that's helped by having a player like Josh Sargent. But as I said, there's other attributes that have maybe contributed to that. And I guess their attacking play becoming more balanced in that way.
Yeah, I think that's probably where a lot of the frustration was probably at the start of the season. I think people could see probably they had the ingredients to perform to the levels they are at the moment, and they have the different avenues to exploit and get, you know, whatever's needed in a game to get the moment to grab goals. Where they were so reliant on John Rowe, it felt like if he didn't perform to the levels, or they couldn't find him in the pockets of space that he, you know, is so used to and enjoys, then they probably didn't really have what it took to go and get results. Where now, yeah, I think, you know, wherever they are on the pitch, you feel like they're going to create something. As you referenced, you've got Zara's vision for the goal the other night, you've got the crosses today, you know, the long range ability of, you know, signs from distance, as we've seen in recent games, you know, the goal against Coventry, the goal today. Zara and Nunez, we know, can shoot from anywhere and probably find the top corner. So, yeah, and it feels more sustainable now. You know, these aren't just sort of reliant on one player performing, and then if they don't perform, then the performances dip off and they don't get the results they require. This is a side that knows how to play, and they'll, you know, David Wagner and his coaching staff deserve a lot of credit for finding these different routes to find, well, effectively the recipe you need to win games. So, yeah, long may that continue. It's obviously now just trying to find the formula away from home that, that will get them the points they require, because you know, irrespective of their ability to win games at home through these different means, they haven't really quite struck the balance yet away from home, which, you know, could be a potentially killer blow to them come the end of the season if they don't sort of hit what they need to away from home.
Yeah, it's and this is the final point, I guess, to close this this part. But it's a side now that looks a lot more comfortable in its own skin. And I go back and think about, I think it was some quotes from Mario Vrančić at the time, and he was speaking about when he played in the David Wagner side, and the first half of the season was quite ropey, and then after Christmas they were significantly better. And there have been points, you know, that we've sat here on this podcast and said they don't look particularly well coached. Well, in the last 5 or 6 weeks, I think you're beginning to see a much improved side in terms of how they impose themselves and their style on games, I would say. And I think that's partly because of some of the confidence that they've gained at Carrow Road, and confidence helps you do that. But even structurally, I mean, a lot of their counter-pressing is better. A lot of their kind of attacking play is better. A lot of their work in possession is better. And some of that, again, there's a range of factors. Some of that is looking better as a result of work on the training pitch. Some of that's having players of different players available who can help. Marcelino Nunez in the last few weeks, for example, in games at Carrow Road has really impacted what they've been able to do with possession. Josh Sargent's helped them in terms of the way that they've the way that they've pressed, but also gives them a slightly different threat in behind, so that allows them to mix it up a little bit more. So, yeah, it feels like a side that at this stage of the season is growing. And I think with 9 games left, that is something that is incredibly positive. Part two, we'll discuss Bring the Heat, Borja Sainz. The two things aren't related. There's a comma there. Borough, and of course we'll look ahead to next week's trip against Stoke as well. See you in a sec. You're listening to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. It's brought to you by Coleman's of Norwich. And of course, the show is being recorded after Norwich City's 5-star performance against Rotherham United at Carrow Road to take them into the top six. We're going to do Bring the Heat in just a moment. I am going to ban the gents from saying Borja Sainz because we're going to speak about him in a second. So that's just to put them on record more than anything else. Paddy, it's been quite the week for young Borja, hasn't it? A red card, a stunning strike. It's it'd be good in Hollywood writing some film scripts, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, that was how I put it to David Wagner after the game, and just sort of gave it a laugh. But it kind of fit in the pattern of that man's Norwich career to date, really. I mean, he was in the programme today, the match day interview, and reflecting on Middlesbrough and the events there. But, you know, 2 days into his Norwich career, he does that bad ankle injury, and that ruled him out effectively as a frontline option for probably 3 or 4 months. And, you know, for a young man coming to this country for the first time, desperate to impress, and called that an awful period in his career that he's, you know, almost took lessons from and had to mature a little bit. And it's kind of almost set the pattern for me. You know, it's been very highs and lows, peaks and troughs, but turbulent, as it has been for the football team as well. You know, in the last 3 or 4 days, we've seen both sides of that again. We've had the red card episode at Middlesbrough, and I'm sure we'll get into the weeds of that again, following on from, obviously, that red card, which was indisputable in comparison to what happened at Middlesbrough. But, you know, that was all his petulance at West Brom on Boxing Day, and that waving imaginary cards at referees. But then, you know, you contrast that with, again, we've seen another picture book goal from him today. Just individual quality. And we saw from the numbers he produced in Turkey, albeit in a team who got relegated from the Turkish top flight last season, that he had that in his armoury. What you can never tell is, will it translate to England? And more importantly, will it translate to the Championship, which is quite a unique challenge, you know, within Europe, let alone England. So the answer is yes, because we've seen again today, you know, give him the ball, give him the areas of the pitch where he can inflict damage, and he has it. He has the ability to score goals out of nothing, really. And, you know, it's just a shame, really. But then, you know, as I say, for a very young person coming to this country for the first time and having to adapt to English football, maybe it's all part of his learning curve, and it'll be, you know, next season onwards in a Norwich shirt, he will emerge as an even bigger influence than potentially he could be over the running, really. But yeah, I mean, the massive thing, and it was underlined again today, is that they didn't lose him for four games. You know, we can separate that out from Sam touched on it, the detrimental impact on the night at Middlesbrough in terms of a game that they were relatively in control of to obviously it running away from them. That's gone, and David referenced that this afternoon. You know, they can't do anything about that. It hurts, but ultimately that's out of their hands. But what they've been able to mitigate is that you take Borja Sainz out with no John Rowe and no Arnold Hernandez to a lesser extent for the next four games. Are Norwich's chances of getting in the top six enhanced or not? I think we all can see, and it was graphically underlined today by the goal he scored, that he could emerge now as quite a pivotal figure in what we all hope is, you know, that successful attack on the top six. But yeah, I mean, it must have been quite a turbulent. I mean, David came out with a nice line that, you know, he went from kind of being angry and sad to the happiest person in the world, Borja, and he was the second happiest person when they got the appeal through on Friday morning. And you can imagine, not that he would have required any extra motivation, but he will have felt whether you're on in the camp that he brought it on himself, or clearly, you know, he was the wronged party, but he would have still felt he'd let people down, let his teammates down. And that must have fueled him today, because not just the goal, I thought in the first half, albeit in a very one-sided affair, but he was very good. He was very good, very intelligent, use of space and the pockets that he takes up. And he's on the same wavelength as a player like Sarah, so it's great to see those two in tandem, really. And yeah, you just hope now that, having been up and down, that we can now get a consistent seam of just positive stories around that man between now and the end of the season. And by that, I mean, just do what he's doing on the pitch. Don't get embroiled. Don't allow individuals or opponents to try and, you know, almost test his temperament, because I sense that's where we're at now. You know, it wasn't just him versus Housen. There was an incident earlier in that Middlesbrough game where Luke Ayling, another very experienced player, has gone through him and basically tried to rile him up. And, you know, off the back of what happened at West Brom, maybe teams are looking at it and they're doing their homework on Norwich, and they think that, you know, maybe he is a weak link in terms of his, you know, his ability to get under his skin. So he swiftly needs to put that to the side now and not get embroiled in anything like that, because his talent is too good to be without over this running.
And that's the edge, isn't it? It's the edge that can, I guess he's a player on the knife edge, and that's what allows him to create the brilliant moments, and that's what, you know, probably enables him and events to happen like they did at West Brom, like they did, again, probably wrongly, as it's been proven, but at Middlesbrough. And that is, I guess, the type of player, but you're right. I think my criticism of him is he's swung a little bit from being, you know, producing moments of brilliance to maybe being a little bit invisible within games. There does need to be a little bit of a constant. Part of that's his age. Part of that is obviously situational with coming to England for the first time. But yeah, what you can't dispute, and we saw it today with an unbelievable goal, almost a carbon copy really of that Sheffield Wednesday one. He's a player that can produce stunning moments, particularly from distance. And that probably leans us nicely, Sam, to speak about the red card and the red card that he got at Middlesbrough. There's been a lot of debate and discourse about this. How has your view kind of developed, I guess? Because if you're anything like me, when it happened in real time, I thought, oh, he's going to be in trouble. Then sort of saw him got a red card and in real time, before seeing any replays, thought that was fair enough. Saw the first replay, which I was kind of watching over someone's shoulder, and thought, not great. Then watched it at half-time and thought it would get overturned. And then kind of watched it a little bit more and thought that an appeal might be quite difficult for them, but probably still that it was a really soft red card. So obviously then it getting overturned. So, I mean, how has your view kind of developed?
It's a lot of stages, isn't it? Yeah, I think when I saw it in real time, I thought probably a red card. Just because, I mean, from that unique vantage point that obviously me and Adam had, as we discussed earlier, we were quite far away, and even from that distance, you could see a tangle of legs. And when you see, you know, whatever the cause was or the intention behind it, when you see Sainz on the floor with his foot at the height of Housen's hip, it never feels great. And then when I watched back the replays, it felt like, yes, it was a soft red card, because, you know, Housen's reaction is obviously over the top. There's definitely no way he was injured or hurt by that in any sense. But I was and still am surprised that it was overturned, to be honest. I'm not saying it was the right decision. In fact, I think a red card probably was quite harsh when you look back on it, but the bar for these decisions tends to be quite high, especially if the referee has seen it and can explain the reasons behind their decision. So I think eventually probably common sense prevailed, and the fact that nobody got hurt and there was no impact on Housen at all really probably played a part in the fact that Scythe did have the card rescinded, and I think that's why it was the rightful decision. But I think given the status quo and the way that football is now, I think if you see that in the Premier League, VAR probably finds a way to make that a red card. And in that sense, I was surprised it was overturned. I think it was the right decision, as I said. But still quite surprised given how high that bar is that they did decide to overturn it. But, you know, as we've already discussed, absolutely massive for Norwich. I wrote a column about the frustration of the fact that it won't bring the 3 points back, and that will be incredibly frustrating if Norwich don't end up achieving their targets at the end of the season. But, I think the amount that we've both sort of chopped and changed our view on it probably tells you how close of a decision it actually was. And when it's that close of a decision, I think it is a surprise to see it overturned, although, you know, I'm not complaining.
I'm going to, you know, I know I'm probably going to find myself sticking up for Bobby Madley and to a lesser extent Johnny Housen in the next couple of minutes. But Bobby Madley first and foremost, I know he's taken a lot of stick, but I can and I've said this throughout really, I can understand why he thinks he's seen what he's seen, because as you mapped out there, he's seen a leg go up. And then he's obviously seen the reaction from Johnny Housen. I think it's probably human instinct to think that there was probably intent there from science just because of where his legs were. And again, there was, however subtle and how it was more of a nudge than a kick, but there was definitely an upwards movement towards the end. So from the position that he was in, he was kind of side on, you have to remember. So he has probably seen a leg move and go up. So I can understand why he in real time thought it was a red card. And again, I think we've been able to, and obviously the appeal proves that it was the wrong decision. But yeah, I can kind of see Adam why he's kind of seen what he's seen, even though he's kind of seen the wrong thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it sounds like we obviously didn't really have a great vantage point to see it. But even in our real time, it looked like a red card because you could see his legs moved not in a natural way, so that probably, you know, at the time indicated it was going to be a red card, you know. And of course the replays are, you know, show it's there's not really much intent there, if any, you know. And it's obviously just kind of brushed Housen shorts, and he's made a massive meal out of it and effectively bought the referee a decision, and the referee's made that decision. So I can understand why Bobby Madley's made that decision. And, you know, I think probably anyone in that situation, irrespective of whether they're, you know, a qualified referee or not, probably sees that movement and automatically thinks it's a red card. Of course, for Norwich's sake, thankfully, the justice has been done, and he's obviously available now for these, well, obviously the three games moving forwards after today, but also today, you know, he's got them the goal when they needed it as well again today to really kind of put Rotherham to bed. So, yeah, it's a huge boost. And of course, it brings up the VAR debate. You know, I still think in that scenario, even in the Premier League, in with VAR in play, I still think it probably gets, at the time, probably is a red card, just because of the movement not being natural. So, but, you know, that's the kind of peaks and troughs of Championship football. You don't have VAR, and I'd much rather that decision be made on the pitch and then the justice be served, but there'd be no VAR versus having VAR, and, you know, then decisions that, as we've seen in the Premier League, are still controversial even with it. So, yeah, Norwich will still have decisions going their way, you know, in their favour between now and the end of the season, and they'll probably recoup some of the points. And if they do miss out on the playoffs, I don't think it will be that game that's killed them. It will be the ones earlier on in the season, you know, the Blackburns at home and the Sunderland away and those kind of games. So, yeah, just brush it under the carpet, move forwards. And, of course, they've got huge 9 games now to, of course, eradicate that from anyone's memory.
Yeah, and just to close the circle, I guess, Paddy, the final one to speak about is Johnny Housen and his role in this, because he's taken a fair amount of stick from Norwich fans. And again, I have no reason to, I'm not going to stick up for him, that's the wrong term, but I do think it's been a little bit over the top, the reaction towards him, because I think let's swap it round. Let's say it was Housen on Ashley Barnes, and you know, Ashley Barnes reacts in the same way. I think you've got fans, a brilliant bit of, you know, experience and housery and all of this stuff. And let's have it as well. I mean, Johnny Howson could have thrown himself on the floor, screamed, as I heard one player do that today, not on Norwich's side, it's worth adding, throw himself on the floor, screamed, done about four rolls and made a right meal of it. He hasn't done that. I understand why people are frustrated that he is pointing to his leg, but in that moment, he's not thinking about 5 years that he's played at Norwich and the relationship that he has with everybody. He's wearing a Middlesbrough shirt. They need a win. They're in a really poor run of form. There was talk even in the press area that we were in about, you know, whether they could get dragged into a relegation race. It was a massive 3 points for them. I don't really understand what there is to be upset or angry about. Did he make more of it than he should have done? Of course he did. But that's professional football. That's what professional footballers do, and what they all do, and what Norwich players would have done in that situation. So I'm not quite sure where the anger is at Johnny Howson or why it's at where it is, because for me, he's just acted how I think any other player would have acted. I think the frustration is because of maybe what his image was at Norwich, where he was, you know, seen as this uber professional who, you know, was very consistent, and Norwich fans have always enjoyed a really good relationship with, and he was a wonderful player during his time at Carrow Road. But again, to an extent, I think that's kind of irrelevant, because he's on a pitch for someone else, trying to win for someone else. So, you know, what's he going to say? Do you know what, ref? There was nothing in that. I don't really understand what he would do to the contrary when he's trying to win a game of football.
No, but I don't wish to speak from a fan's perspective on this, but I'd imagine it's quite hard to detach the emotional pull that he was that player for Norwich, and that he was there for so long and so intrinsic to a successful period, and an excellent player when he was here, that how dare he bite the hand that used to feed him, almost vibe. I'm assuming that must be somewhere in the psychology of this, if there are Norwich fans who've reacted in that way. Do my best to avoid staying too often on X, if I can avoid it, because I've got more.
You should see what they're saying about you. It's a good
job. Yeah, that's probably why I've got more important things in my life than spending hours on that platform. But I would concur with you, Connor, and obviously his post-match comments probably fueled it a little bit. You know, when he was,
probably helped Norwich, hasn't it, in the end?
Well, by all accounts, it was part of their submission. Yep, that and the footage. So thanks for that, Johnny. Because I'm not sure, to take Sam's point, that they probably would have reached the threshold to overturn it purely on the pictures, because it does infer, I mean, things like, I'm paraphrasing here, that, you know, some of the Norwich players said they'd have done the same thing, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of contact, but there was contact, kind of thing. In other words, he accentuated what there was in that incident. You know, the telling frame on the footage for me was that he actually takes a look at Madley before he starts to furiously rub his thigh, hop, and then fall over. You know, none of that is great from a point of view of...
It's football, isn't it?
No, but in terms of why Norwich probably found themselves able to successfully appeal that. But you're right, yeah, that is the game. Any advantage, now you can, you know, if you want to take a more egalitarian, Corinthian look at it, and it's, you know, how dare these professionals use any means, fair or foul, to gain an advantage. But in the real world, that's exactly what they do, especially when the stakes are as high as they are at the top end of the professional game. And as he said in those post-match comments, he is now a Middlesbrough player. He will do whatever it takes to win a game of football for Middlesbrough, particularly in the context, I think they were 1-8 going into that game. And as you said there was a bit, maybe a fear they were looking over their shoulder. He'd missed a few games through injury. He's the captain of that team. He would have felt a responsibility to lead them out of that slump. And if he felt in that moment, in the heat of that moment, you know, there was an interesting, somebody made a point to me in the press room today as well, but maybe part of it as well, that he wanted to deflect a little bit from the initial part of that incident was pretty forceful challenge from him. He's off his feet. He's not really in control.
Can I make a point on this as well, which I've seen a load of people like posting the still of the tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not for me... always reflective of how a tackle has actually gone. It was a yellow card tackle, I think is basically what I'm saying. I know the image has made it look like he went flying in with 2 feet. He's actually got away with what I think is a yellow card, and that's probably it. I don't think it's a case of, you know, he was going to get sent off, but science went instead. I think it was probably a yellow for him, and obviously the science debate we can and have had. But the still, I think, it's a little bit disingenuous to just suggest that he went in the way that picture suggests, which I don't think is really reflective of the tackle.
Yeah, no, is that on X, is it? I won't have seen that. Yeah,
I obviously spent too much of my time on that.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, the footage I've seen, the actual real-time footage, it is a forceful challenge. And in the climate we now exist in terms of professional football, you know, maybe it's more of a Premier League thing than a Championship muck and nettles type of thing. But I could see that being upgraded to a red if it was in the Premier League setting. But I mean, that's just an element of it that the reality is Johnny Howson is now a Middlesbrough player, will do what it takes to gain an advantage. And forgetting what happened thereafter in terms of how it tilted back in Norwich's favour with the appeal, you could argue, you know, that turned the game. They were losing. They were going to go 1-1 win in 9. More pressure maybe on Carrick. So you could argue that was the defining moment in a game that they ended up winning. So he's delivered what he was hoping for in that moment, and that's all he's caring about, I'm sure. I'm sure he's not too bothered in the slightest about Norwich going down to 10 men or what it means for his old club. And yeah, as you rightly say, if the boot's on the other foot, there may be some Norwich fans who wouldn't want to win in those circumstances, but I'll venture there'll be quite a few who wouldn't be at all perturbed to have taken 3 points if there had been a role reversal.
I mean, that was the basis that Ashley Barnes was signed upon, isn't it? I mean, really, to produce moments like that. So, like you say, he's won them the game, and I think they beat QPR as well today. So, again, it's one event that's probably turned them around. He's played more games for Middlesbrough than he did for Norwich, been there a longer period of time. So I just think that's been a little bit blown out of proportion. He's a professional player trying to win a football game. So, as you know, he scored for Norwich against Leeds. He didn't. You know, Leeds fans going to say, "How dare he?" You know, I think it's a little bit silly. But yeah, of course, I understand the thrust of it, which is he shouldn't have acted in that way. No, of course he shouldn't. But that's unfortunately, whether you like it, whether you don't, that is professional football now, isn't it? And people do try and get people sent off, and they do try and change games because, as we've mapped out, there was no way that Middlesbrough were going to win that 11-11. So they had to try and go down that route. And he did, and his team won the game. So there we go. Bring the heat anyway. So we can't have Borja Sainz and the red card. I'm gonna kick us off, and I'm just going to say Cardiff City. Samuel?
Give me a second.
95 and 100, I think it was. Great work from them.
That late? I wasn't sure it was that late. Fair play. I'm going to say the air conditioning in the Norwich City press lounge. It's probably more Paddy's story than mine. But literal heat. I thought, you know, why not go for some literal heat for once, you know. But I've been in that situation before. I said this. I'm not sure it's interesting enough, really. But there is an incredibly hot air conditioning unit in the Norwich City press lounge that I've sat under before, thinking, oh, this will be nice and toasty. And then by the end, I've lost 3 pounds in sweat. So, I think Paddy struggled with that a little bit today. That's you know, I'll try and think outside the box. I'll admit it hasn't gone as well as I'd hoped, but you got to try things in life, haven't you?
That was poor. Paddy?
I'm going to defy you, Connor. I am going to go back to the Borja Sainz red card incident, but I'm going to talk about the characters in the Norwich chain of command who basically put that appeal together, because by all accounts they were videographers burning the midnight oil. They had pitch side cameras there that night, and you know, I think they basically worked through the night, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, to lodge first thing that appeal. But for those selfless individuals at Norwich City who won't get any credit, so that's why I'm giving them some credit now. I'm not going to name-check them personally, but there was a lot of people behind the scenes. As David said immediately after the game, that he would leave it with the people who matter in terms of where these things come. And, you know, Marquinhos last season, Sainz this season, they know what they're doing when it comes to...
Yeah, there we go. Two appeals, two successes. Adam... I'm looking at you to save the segment, really. Try and pull something out of that.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I think there's a few obvious contenders. Gabriel Zara and Marcelo Nunez. But for me, I think I've picked fullbacks far too often recently, but I can't not. I mean, Jack Stacey again today was faultless. 2 assists. I think that's now about 6 or 7 assists for the season, which it's not bad numbers for a fullback, particularly given he had that dip in form sort of around the Christmas period. David Wagner acted, gave him a week off, and he's obviously come back and looked like the player that maybe we had at the start of the campaign. And even Sam McCallum as well today, I thought another really solid performance, and I've been consistently quite impressed with him ever since the turn of the year, really, sort of going back to probably the FA Cup games. And I actually feel like he's offered Norwich more than Demi Yiannoulis in recent times. So I'm quite glad, obviously, it's more situational today with Yiannoulis missing out due to injury. But I think he merited his place in the squad again today. And his link-up play with Sines was really pretty good at different points. And sort of some of the crosses he put into the area, into dangerous positions, was worth noting. So I think the fullbacks would be my general thing. But I think Jack Stacey is the one I'm going to pick out. He's been a really good find, and hopefully his form can continue into the last final games of the season.
Thank you, Adam. That was a much better answer than some in that segment. I'm just going to go around very quickly. In a word, better goal, Sarah or Sainz?
Sarah.
It's so hard.
I don't think it's a debate, if I'm honest.
I know you think Sarah. I think Sainz. The first touch is unbelievable. The way that he takes that in while it's midair, and then he runs 15 yards, and then that finish. The Sarah finish is a way better finish, but as a goal, I would have it exactly down the line, but if I have to pick one, Sainz.
Adam?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Sarah. I think kind of the ability to sort of change his body movement and spin in that kind of way. It's something that's obviously got his locker. You kind of go back to Millwall away last season, the ability to kind of just, I don't know, almost change his whole body shape to fire the ball in the back of the net. It was quite the finish. Certainly when it sort of left his boot, you thought, that's not actually going to go in, is it? And it did. So, special player, special goal. He's a real talent.
Goal of the season? I'm trying to think of others. For me, in terms of technique, nothing is springing to mind that is as good. But I feel like I've got a really glaring one that maybe I'm missing.
We had earlier in the season, it was like, oh, it was Sainz versus Liverpool or Sainz versus...
Sarah's... Sarah's better.
I think that I might agree with that.
No, I think Sarah's better, just in terms of the technique, the fact that the ball's come to... He's off balance... the technique to cut across the ball and put it in the top corner, I think for me it's probably edges it.
Is unbelievable, but I just think like that Rowe goal and this Sainz one to a lesser extent it's like loads of different things and different skills put together.
I'm just judging it like I think the Sarah one is. I think the Sarah one is like, do not underestimate how hard that is to do on the volley. To guide that into the other corner from where it's come from with, it's basically a rising effort. He's cut across the ball. The technique on that is unbelievably good. I think you'd be really hard-pressed to find a better Norwich goal than that this season. Pad?
Yeah, no, I'd have to stop and think. There's been... I did some of those rockets. Not that I didn't enjoy the one against Coventry, obviously, from Sainz, but some of his pureness of strike is a joy to behold. But... that today. I'll have to watch it back, but it felt like he's almost... It's like the rotation, the backspin he's put on it, the connection is...
That's proper top corner as well. It's not one of these where it's like,
It's just rising. It's like it's like a plane going off a, what do you call them things?
Runway.
Yeah, no, I was thinking I mean at sea, those aircraft launches, what do they call them?
Lost me.
Yeah, like in the Navy, those planes that get launched off...
ships.
Yeah, those ones, yeah. But like they have a ramp, don't they? And like the direction is like that. I mean, it was just like, and then it goes, as you say, right into the top corner. It's and
Arrow right there. You could have just gone with Arrow.
Yeah, but the thing I was thinking of was Paul Chesterton's got these great frames from that goal, from his position, and you've got like Sam McCallum, he's got his hands on his head in the foreground. It's like, what am I seeing? And Ashley Barnes is the one, he's right next to him, he's the next player, and he's just looking at the lower Barkley going, it's Gabby Zara, what do you expect? It's just that even his teammates, when that goal hit the back of the net, were just like mind blown.
You mentioned Ashley Barnes, got lost a little bit in the Middlesbrough debate, but his goal was probably the funniest goal I've ever seen scored. It's proper, like you'd see that at Eton Park on a Sunday, wouldn't you? They do all count. Yeah, thank goodness for that. Sam, finally then, a trip to
aircraft carrier.
Aircraft carrier.
It's gone to me,
right? Okay, that'll mean something to some people.
It was worth waiting.
It was Stoke away, Sam. They struggled a little bit, I think. from what I say, it's back-to-back wins for Stoke. So they've picked up a little bit under Stephen Schumacher. They're obviously embroiled in this mega relegation scrap at the moment in the Championship, which is seemingly involves about half the division at the moment. It's not going to be a Tuesday night, but Stoke, always a very difficult place to go by Championship standards.
Yeah, sort of, but it's one of those games where you'd like to see Norwich go and take the same initiative that they did at Middlesbrough. Hopefully they'll go there, you know, now that obviously McLean's recognised that they're trying to replicate that home dominance away from home. Hopefully they'll be going to Stoke, not fretting the intangible problems that you face when you go away from home, and they'll try and dominate the game and they'll try and get a hold and a grip of it and dominate possession as they did for that first half an hour against Middlesbrough, because technically and tactically there's not much evidence that Stoke should really be competing with Norwich based on how both teams have done this season. So yeah, I think the momentum they're building and probably the increased support that will mean from their fans next Saturday mean that it will be a slightly more difficult test than it would have been a couple of weeks ago. But I think we have to look at it in the same way that we did Middlesbrough. Hopefully Norwich can go there and be as progressive and attacking as they were, and approach it in the same way that they would a game at Carrow Road, because I've got no doubts, based on their performance when they've tried to do that, that they will be able to do that against Stoke. And it's, for me now, about mentality and tactics, because I think if they get those right, then that should be another 3 points.
Yeah, and a fantastic opportunity as well, because Hull and Coventry aren't playing. They were due to play each other next weekend. But cover on a cup run, Pad. You're not off to Molyneux next week, are you?
You've already cracked this today, Connor. I don't know what you're expecting. I'm going to say different. No. The cup run will end at Molyneux.
Hypothetically, if they get to the semi-final, are you going to be going to Wembley?
No, I'll wait for the playoff final again, mate.
So you're backing them over Norwich to get in?
No, I'm not backing them over Norwich. No, West Brom will fall away and they'll both be in there. And then they'll knock out Leeds and Ipswich. Not Leeds, Southampton and Ipswich. And maybe I don't want that scenario, actually. Covey, Norwich at Wembley, that wouldn't be...
At least you win either way, though.
You could get a half-and-half scarf.
Yeah, could do, yeah. I suppose that's the way to look at it. What a lovely day out that would be. Norwich at Wembley, we'll take that, won't we?
Yes, we will. I'm still... Every time I close my eyes at night, I just see Ipswich in third, Norwich in sixth.
You'll be doing TikTok. Do we agree that Connor does a TikTok dance if they win at Wembley?
That won't happen. So that's fine.
We did agree. Just get that on record.
I'll do it with Onel Hernandez. How about that? I can pop on his. That works. That probably is our lot for this week. Thank you very much for watching, listening to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast. We'll, of course, come to you after next week's game against Stoke. And then I think we're going to do an international break podcast. Potentially a different location, mapping out various situations and permutations around the top six hunt. That will be with eight. Yeah, well, Norwich will have 8 games left. Obviously, we'll have 9, but with 8 to 9 games left also. 5 stars back in the top 6. Some Saturday. Thank you for joining us. See you soon.